Hi everybody, and welcome to Cooking in Real Time. My name is Zora O'Neill, and this week I am cooking something that sounds disgusting, but is one of my secret vices. It is meatloaf. I'm turning on the oven right now because it's going to take a little while. Turning it on to 350. Meatloaf, I think the word loaf just sounds disgusting. In French, they call it pâté, and it sounds much nicer. Anyway, it's especially great to have around the next day as leftovers, and you can make a cold meatloaf sandwich, which is super delicious, which is like half the reason of making it. So I'm going to make some meatloaf and some little roasted potatoes, and then, oh, some dandelion greens, because you want some kind of bitter, strong greens to go with the kind of fatty meatloaf. They sort of balance each other out. The first thing I'm going to do, actually, is get my little potatoes started, because I think they might take longer than the meatloaf itself. So these potatoes are a style of potato that I learned from my mom, and I have no idea where she learned them. Basically involves peeling your potatoes, then slicing them lengthwise, and placing them cut side down in a little buttered pan. And what happens is that cut side gets all brown and crispy, and then the peeled outside gets a little sort of chewy, and they get all nice and puffy inside. And I'm just using regular russet potatoes, kind of the smallest ones I have, so that they'll bake kind of quickly. And this is probably the only time in my life I peel potatoes. Usually, if I mash them or whatever, I leave the peels on. It's just tastier and has a little bit better texture. But for this, I kind of on purpose want the outside to have no peel. So I'm just doing two of them because I'm just cooking for two people tonight. And they're kind of nice to have around leftover, but not as versatile as, say, boiled potatoes or baked potatoes. So you could make more, but what makes them special is kind of lost if you reheat them. This is why I never peel. It takes so long. I'm nearly done, although in peeling I've discovered some weird spots on this one potato. I'm just gonna make it even smaller. Yeah. That's me cutting off a great deal of nasty, rotten spot on my potato. Ooh, okay, these are very small. That's all right. I gotta say, there's nothing grosser in the world than the smell of rotting potatoes. It's kind of like having fish rotting in your pantry. I'm not sure why it's the same smell, but ugh, it's intense. So I'm in a hurry to use up these potatoes. All right, I'm cutting them lengthwise. All right, there we go with the second one. And I'm gonna put these in a little baking pan. I'm gonna put a little dab of butter in there. And just gonna stick that. I'm putting about a half a tablespoon of butter in the pan. And I'm just gonna stick that in the oven to melt. You could also use a heavy skillet if you wanted to, like a big cast iron skillet, which is normally what I have. I would not use a Pyrex baking dish unless it's the only thing you have. Things don't brown up quite as nicely in Pyrex as they do in metal baking pans. So I'm just waiting for that butter to melt, and then those can go in the oven. Rinsing off my potato peeler because the potato starch can get stuck on and be hard to scrub off. Rinsing my knife also. All right, and then moving on to our meatloaf. Oh, the first thing I'm gonna do is, this is something we didn't ever do when I was growing up, I don't think. Oh. Or maybe we're not doing it tonight either. Aw, damn. Thought I had a couple slices of bacon left. So, I guess we won't be having bacon on top of our meatloaf. That was the sort of adult enhancement of my meatloaf, was laying a couple of bacon slices over the top. And normally what you'd do is fry them up in a pan until they're sort of halfway cooked, and then lay them over the meatloaf while it baked. It is delicious, but we're out of bacon. So, no need to let that stop us. We can carry on. It will still be good. What I need to do then, first of all, is chop up a little onion and garlic. A very little of each. You do not need much at all. I'm making about a pound meatloaf, which is good for a couple people and a couple of lunches. A lot of recipes, most recipes call for 2 pounds of meat, and you don't really need that unless you're feeding an army. And the other nice thing about doing a smaller, here I'm slicing a very small onion right now. The other nice thing about doing a smaller meatloaf is that it bakes faster. Ordinarily, takes about an hour to bake, but when you've got a smaller lump of meat in there, it should take, I'm guessing, about 40 minutes, but we'll see how it goes. So I'm slicing my onions lengthwise like I normally do, and keeping all the slices together, and then just rotating 90 degrees and cutting into a little dice. So not very big pieces. You don't want huge chunks of onion in every bite. I've turned on my skillet here. It's over high heat. Just started preheating. I'm going to drizzle in a little olive oil and just a dab of butter. Sort of make up for the fact that we won't be having any bacon on top. So, there we go. Onions in. And I'm going to want to throw another garlic clove. Actually, I'm using two because there's small ones in the middle of the center of the garlic head. But you don't want to go overboard on garlic. Or you might want to. The nice thing about a meatloaf is it's pretty forgiving. If you want to put crazy flavors in there, you can. But I basically, mine is like so boring and all American, you might not be able to stand it and you might have to tinker with it. That's up to you. I don't like to tinker with it too much because, like I said, that the cold meatloaf sandwich the next day is so satisfying. I don't want anything to get in the way of that. So, stirring my onion up there, checking on my butter that's in the oven for the potatoes, and that has melted. So, pulling that out. Basically, you want to rub the outside, the not cut side of the potato around in the butter, to coat that side, and then flip them over, put the cut side down in the pan, and you can grate a little pepper over the top of them if you want. Sprinkle a teeny bit of salt. These can get seasoned at the table a little bit too, because you're going to want to sort of pop them open, maybe put a little more butter inside. Okay, those guys are in, the potatoes are in. My onions are softening up nicely. I just want to toss in the garlic real quick, and I was interrupted in the middle of chopping up the garlic. Back to my, like I said, teeny tiny little cloves. And you want pretty small slices. I've just sort of held the two garlic cloves together and sliced them really fine. If you slice them fine enough, you don't have to worry about mincing them into little bits. You just don't want, again, you don't want like giant bites full of garlic. Or maybe you do. So, just turning the heat up here to give the garlic a tiny little blast, but basically this is done. You just need to cook the onions until they're a little bit soft, a little bit translucent. They're gonna be roasting more in the oven when they're mixed in with the meat. So you're basically just cooking them just enough to take that harsh edge off. And basically I'm just cooking the garlic enough till I can smell it, which I can. So I'm turning that heat off. And now I'm proceeding to combine all the other ingredients. which basically a meatloaf is like a giant meatball. You need some kind of binder, something to hold the meat together to keep it from falling apart into little crumbly pieces. And that is usually both egg, so I've got one egg here, both egg and breadcrumbs. My dad is still bitter about a recipe for meatloaf he read on the back of the breadcrumbs box decades ago. And because it was on the back of the breadcrumbs box, it had a certain bias toward breadcrumbs. And so the proportions were ridiculous, and he basically ended up with this like big wad of meat-flavored bread, and learned from that point on never to trust the recipes on the back of a product box, because they're invariably skewed in favor of that product. In this case, I'm going to use panko, the little Japanese fluffy breadcrumbs. You want about, for a pound, you want a little bit more than half a cup, I think. And these I do measure because you want to be able to eyeball it, but still, if you go overboard, like I said, if you go overboard with the, I'd say a heaping half cup. So either use panko or take some bread you have in the house and whiz it up in the blender. And you can use whole wheat bread. I know my parents did when I was growing up. It was not disgusting. But I'm sure it's a little bit nicer and not so intrusive with a nice white bread. So right now in the pan, all I've got is an egg and some panko. Like I said, a little bit more than half a cup. Various seasonings. I do thyme, which you can use fresh if you happen to have it, but it's going to be in the oven so long that fresh kind of loses its magic, so you may as well just use dried. I'm going to use a big pinch of dried thyme. There we go. And that sort of skews it toward, if you're feeling bad about it being an all-American meatloaf, the thyme helps skew it a little bit more toward French pâté. Make you feel a little bit more cosmopolitan and not so school lunchy. But let's see what else is going to go in there. I'm going to give, I don't use Worcestershire sauce too much, but this is a good place. I want about a teaspoon, a few glugs. You heard that sort of splashing in there. You can put in hot sauce if you want. I know a lot of people like a little spicy kick. I usually get all the spice I want from mustard, and I'm just putting in like about a teaspoon of Dijon mustard. Again, gives you a little bit of a French angle on everything. And I'm just mixing all these. The meat has not been added, by the way, yet. It's easier to mix all the other ingredients and then mix that in with the meat. You're a little more sure that things have all mixed together evenly. Putting in a big pinch of salt. And a few grinds of pepper. And let's see what else. Oh, and then the last thing really is you want either milk or yogurt. I happen to have a ton of yogurt, so I'm going to use that. What milk or yogurt does is the acid in it. You want about a big tablespoon worth. You can start with that. You might have to add more later. We'll get to that. The acid in the milk helps tenderize the protein in the meat and also helps everything sort of glom together. All right, so I'm cracking my egg here and I'm stirring in the yogurt and the Worcestershire sauce. Just making sure that's kind of whisked together with my fork, and then working in the breadcrumbs, and then I'm dumping in my meat, which I've not talked to you about the meat yet. The arguments about what kind of meat to use for meatloaf could fill a book. I use a mix of pork and veal and beef, and actually tonight I'm using pork and veal and buffalo, because whatever, they happen to have it at the store, and I was curious. Now I'm mixing everything together right now. You can hear it squelching, mixing everything together with a fork. You can use all beef. I think that's what we ate when I was growing up. I'm sure my parents did not go to the trouble getting a mix from the butcher. But the pork, of course, adds a nice little extra fatty richness. Veal, whatever, maybe it doesn't make a difference. It is a little more tender. Often grocery stores will sell prepackaged stuff that is labeled meatloaf mix, and it is just this mix of pork and veal and beef. So if they have that, that's great. I am honestly a little leery of buying ground beef. I always make sure I buy it at a store where they have an in-house butcher, so I know they're grinding it themselves. The sort of commercial prepackaged ground beef scares me a great deal. So if you're going to a butcher, you can just say, like, this is what I'm making, make me a mix, and they'll grind it all through the grinder together, which is nice. So I'm mashing this all up with my fork, trying to get the meats evenly distributed and get all the spices. As long as the mix is not sticking to the side of the bowl, you're good, and mine is not. If it is sticking, you can add a little bit more milk or yogurt. That's looking good. I think we're there. And, oh yes, of course we have to mix in the onions. I forgot all about that. You can mix in the onions and whatever oil is in the pan. If you were lucky enough to have bacon, could have fried up the bacon about halfway, taken it out, and then fried the onions and the garlic and the bacon grease, and mixed that all in with your meatloaf mix. But we didn't have that, alas. All right, just trying to get most of these onions incorporated. They tend to want to fall out and stay in the bottom of the bowl. Okay. It looks good. You don't want to work the meat too much because it makes it all tough. So this, the same rules as apply for making hamburgers. You don't want to maul the little proteins. They get cranky. And now I'm looking around trying to remember what I normally bake this in. You want a big-ish baking pan because, gross as it sounds, this is probably another reason people do not eat meatloaf that much, is it throws off a lot of grease. And if you put it in a baking pan where it fits really snugly, then it's gonna end up sort of soaking in its own grease and not really cooking or browning at all on the outside, not the way you would like. So I'm using like a regular metal baking pan. What are these, like 9 by 12 inches or something? Just gave it a rinse because it's been in my pantry for a long time. Okay, so you can do this with your spoon or you can do it with your hands. You just want to sort of scoop this piece of meat into a little loaf shape as even as possible, because sort of you don't want the ends, for instance, to be too thin as they get cooked through. So flatten it out a little bit. There. Okay. Squish it all together. Give your hands a good rinse if you were mauling it with your hands like I was. And now I'm going to whip up, even though I don't have the bacon, I think I will whip up a little tiny bit of glaze to put on top. Glaze sounds so fancy. It's really, really just ketchup and sugar. This is actually, I'm taking a bit of ketchup and I'm just squeezing this into maybe a couple tablespoons. I'm just squeezing it into the pan, or into the bowl that I had the meatloaf in. You don't need to get anything else dirty. You want ketchup, you want a little bit of brown sugar. I've got some demerara here that's gonna stir in more easily, but you could use any brown sugar. Only like a teaspoon of sugar. You don't want to go overboard because the ketchup is already sweet. And then you want to shake in some vinegar. The milder, the better. You could use red wine vinegar, but I happen to have some apple cider vinegar here. And I'm putting in about a teaspoon of that. Stirring everything together. If you remember my Sloppy Joe recipe, this is probably all sounding very, very familiar. Like I said, there was a lot of pound of ground round kind of recipes when I was a kid. Okay, so that's all ready. I've just stirred up the ketchup, sugar, vinegar mix, and I'm pouring that over the top of the meatloaf. There really should be some other neutral word instead of meatloaf that isn't pâté, because when people think of pâté, they usually think of liver pâté, but not all French pâtés have liver in them. So there should be something to describe this particular concoction that does not sound like loaf. Alright. So I've got the sort of ketchup-y, sugary business smeared on the top, and I'm putting that in the oven and also taking a little peek at my potatoes, which are starting to sizzle away nicely. And now the only thing we have left to do while we're waiting for all those things to bake is the only thing we have to do is to get our dandelion greens ready. And so I want to take a minute to wash up my dishes. Which I feel like there should be sort of Jeopardy-style music playing in the background. And I'm doing all the pointless kitchen tasks. Don't really have much more commentary on how better to wash your dishes, for instance. So, moving on to the concept of dandelion greens. Dandelion greens are probably the most bitter of bitter greens. And not everybody, they're not routine in a lot of stores. So if you can't get them, don't sweat it. If you wanted to have, you still want to have some pretty assertive greens for this dinner. Like I said, you want like a really nice green salad. Okay, that's done. I basically just tidied up and cleared up the sink because we're going to have to be washing greens, which takes a lot of space. So on the subject of greens, you want, like I said, bitter greens are great when you're having something fatty. It just seems good for you, stimulates the digestion, very key. Dandelions are the bitterest of the bitter greens. And you might not be able to get them where you are. Honestly, they are like pretty much what you would buy in a store is pretty much the same thing as what's growing in your lawn. And sure, they are a weed, but they're a very, very tasty weed. They can be intensely bitter. I live in a Greek neighborhood, and Greeks eat a ton of dandelion greens. So we have a choice of three different dandelion greens. We have like Texas purple bitter ones. We have some other bitter ones, and then we have sweet dandelion greens, which are not sweet at all. They're just less bitter than the bitter ones. So those are the ones you definitely want to get if you're not going to be cooking the bejesus out of them. To deal with the super bitter ones, you basically have to sort of blanch them in separate things of water to get some of the bitterness out. With the regular so-called sweet dandelion greens, you can usually just fry them up in a pan and they'll be good. Or you can even, if you have a taste for it, you can even eat these raw in a salad. And then all that noise is me rinsing the 18 pounds of sand off of the dandelion greens, giving them another soak. Yeah, a raw dandelion green salad is very bracing, and the fattier the dinner, the more delicious it is. I'm tasting these right now just to get an idea. Ooh, they're pretty intense. The first bite is, you're like, that's no big deal, that tastes like lettuce. And then the more you chew, the more the bitterness expands. And some people would say, why would you want to eat anything bitter? Like I said, it does, bitter helps stimulate your digestive tract. And it is a nice counterpoint to lots of other flavors. So what I'm doing now is crushing up a few more cloves of garlic. These are going to go in with the greens. And it looks like I've got about 4 small cloves of garlic. That'll have to do because that's the end of that. Actually, no, I think I've got another head of garlic. Well, yes. I'll do one more big clove. So I've got the equivalent of like 3 regular cloves of garlic here. So what I'm going to do with the greens is just wilt them in a pan. And I did that this summer with some arugula. This is going to take a little bit longer because dandelion greens are sturdier, but not too much longer. It's a very quick treatment. And then just to finish them, I'm going to lay over some very, 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 very thin slices of cheese, which sounds a little deadly given all the meatiness we're going to consume. But I just had this at a restaurant, and it was really kind of great. They used a really good quality cheddar. I think I'm going to look in the fridge and see what we have, but I think I have some nice Gruyere that could be good. But cheddar is great if you have, maybe not orange cheddar, as it might just set the wrong tone visually, but if you have a nice white cheddar, that would be ideal. And we might have that. If you don't have the cheddar, you can sprinkle over some grated Parmesan, and that will certainly be delicious. I'm just chopping these garlic cloves up to pretty coarse pieces. Here, I do kind of want big mouthfuls of garlic, unlike in the meatloaf. Adds a little texture variety, gives you a big punch of flavor. So I've got those chopped up, scraping them into a bowl to take them over to the stove. And how handy, we still have our skillet left from frying up the onions. So I'm just going to go ahead and use that same skillet. I'm going to go ahead and cook these now because a lot of greens, you can serve them close to room temp. They don't have to be piping hot. I'm going to go ahead and cook these now, but if you were making a bigger meatloaf that was going to take a full hour to cook, or you just think there's going to be a lag, you can go ahead and do these pretty much right before you sit down to eat because they're only going to take a few minutes. In fact, it's kind of nice to let the meatloaf rest a little, so you could even, once the meatloaf is done, let the meatloaf rest, and while that's happening, you just put together the greens. I'm going to go ahead and cook them now, so we have everything, and I think I'm going to let you sort of ride out those last few minutes on your own. We're not going to cook entirely to completion tonight because I honestly don't know what I would do with you, just pass the time. So I'm basically heating up my skillet, got it on high, I'm putting in a couple glugs of olive oil, enough to give a nice generous coating to the pan. And when your oil is hot, you can smell the oliviness, which is nice, coming off. And I'm scraping in my garlic. You can hear that sizzling. And again, you just want to fry the garlic around till it's fragrant. It doesn't have to really take on any color or change in any way. You just want to release those little garlic oils into the larger olive oil. And then you just take a big handful of your greens, and they're going to sizzle and pop because they're wet and the water hitting the hot oil is not great. So stand back And it doesn't look like they're all going to fit in the pot or in the skillet, but you will make them fit. And part of the way you'll make them fit is by sticking a lid on to keep the steam in. So just do that for a couple of minutes. And while that's happening, I'm going to get my cheese out. What do we have? We have Gruyere. And I will try that because I'm very curious. It may be disgusting, in which case I will tell you on the website, honestly. My backup in this cheese drawer selection that I happen to have, my backup would just be grated Parmesan. Cannot go wrong with grated Parmesan. Just adds an extra, it's like salt, but better. But like I said, the best thing to recreate what I had last week at this restaurant anyway, the best thing would be some really nice, sharp aged cheddar. Oh no, we don't want, you know what, that cheese. Cheese smells very moldy. All right, you can hear I'm going back to my greens just to give them a stir. They've softened up quite a bit. They've softened up, and now I'm sort of reaching down into the bottom with my spoon and flipping them around. And I think I'm going to add just a little drizzle of water, maybe 2 tablespoons, not even that, 1 tablespoon of water. Just need a little bit more moisture in here. If you had an ice cube of, putting the lid back on there, if I had an ice cube of chicken stock, I could throw that in there. If you happen to have some chicken stock hanging out in the back of your fridge, and go ahead and use that. While those are cooking down a little further, I'm going to cut super thin slices of cheese, like so you can almost see through them. You want them basically to start to melt as soon as you put them on top of the greens. So in that respect, it is nice to serve this piping hot because you can see the melty cheese transformation at the table. But the flavor is also good if you let it sit around. And if you think you might have it sitting around, then that might be a case for using the grated Parmesan instead of these little thin cheese slices. Okay. I'm going to give this one more stir, the greens. And basically, you just want to cook them until the stems are soft, so you can kind of poke the stems with the edge of your spoon and see if they're giving yet. And also, a lot of the liquid will eventually cook away, and that's usually a good marker that you're close to done. I'm going to sprinkle some salt in there before I forget. If you were using chicken stock, you probably wouldn't need to add any salt, because between the chicken stock and the cheese, you're probably going to be plenty salty. And a couple more slices of cheese, because of course I can't help but eat a couple of them while I'm slicing. Okay, the other thing you can use to slice cheese really thin is a potato peeler, a vegetable peeler. This is really handy for hard cheeses. It works okay with cheddar cheese, as long as it's been well refrigerated and hasn't been sitting out. It works great for Parmesan cheese if you want to do sort of nice little shavings, little ribbons of crunchy cheese in your salad, for instance, or something. So that's good to know. You don't always have to use your microplane zester. All right, stirring. If I just leave it alone. This is what happens when I get done with everything too soon. I'll peek in here at all the various meatloaf goodness. The meatloaf has yet to do any sort of dramatic transformation. Basically just looks like a slab of meat with ketchup poured on top, which is not so appealing, honestly. But it will be, I promise. And the potatoes are starting to sizzle up kind of nicely. I'm gonna poke one of them. They're gonna need about 45 minutes total until they're good and brown and cooked all the way through. And I'm guessing that's how much the meatloaf is gonna take as well. Okay, there's still some liquid in this pan, and so I've just taken off the lid, and I'm gonna let all that water cook away. Got some nice big nuggets of garlic in here. So visually, it looks delicious. Great. Yeah, everything is looking nicely wilted. The stems feel tender. They're a little bit stringy, but there's not too much you can do about that. Developing a taste for bitter greens. It makes so much more eating possible. I mean, maybe you don't need that kind of encouragement, but it does make an otherwise greasy feeling dinner seem not quite so deadly for you. There's something about those kind of greens that always makes me feel like I'm doing an unequivocal good for my body. Anyway, just tidying up. You can hear the liquid is cooking away. You can hear this shift is now, instead of sort of a steamy sound, now we've got some actual sizzling. All right. That is good. I've turned the heat off. Turn the flame off, and I think I'll slide these onto a little serving plate and just lay the cheese over, and they are done. It's kind of nice to use little tongs to get them all out. Then you can kind of use the tongs to arrange the greens on the plate, and you want to lay them out in sort of a shallow pile so that there's more surface area to put the cheese on. Make sure you've got all the garlic. Don't let that go to waste. And actually, I think what I'll do before I put the cheese on, I'm just gonna give a really quick squeeze of lemon because you want that, give it just a tiny bit of brightness. Very light. I think I've got a very old, crunchy half of a lemon here, and I'm just gently, gently squeezing it. I'm laying cheese over. Some of my slices are not quite as fabulously thin as they should have been, but you could always put this on some sort of heat-proof platter and stick it under the broiler really quickly if you wanted to get it all done and then reheat it just a tiny bit before you brought it to the table. Ooh, I think I did get a little carried away slicing up the cheese. Anyway, that looks beautiful, and like I said, I think I'm going to leave you on your own for the rest of the finishing up. I think you've got about 10 to 15 minutes before the potatoes are done. They're going to be crispy and brown on the bottom, and they're going to be, like I said, sort of leathery around the outside, and they should be fluffy in the middle. And the meatloaf is going to be, if you want to get technical about it, it should be about 160 degrees internally if you want to use a meat thermometer, but basically it's done when it looks done, when the glaze is nice and sort of dark brown and syrupy looking, and when the meat is done all the way through. And like I said, you do want to let it rest just a tiny, tiny bit. So enjoy your meal, enjoy your meatloaf, your pate, whatever you want to call it. If you think of something more brilliant to call it that sounds a lot more appealing, email me and let me know, zora@cookinginrealtime.com. Check out the website for photos and recipes, as usual, and any other comments, feel free to send them my way. Oh, and like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I'm on Twitter @cookrealtime, and you can sign up to follow that there. I've posted a few little book recommendations, a couple essays, that kind of thing. So tune into that. Oh, one more tip. Your meatloaf sandwich tomorrow with the cold meatloaf. Basically, butter your bread, a little bit of ketchup, and the meatloaf. If you want to add lettuce, you can, but basically butter, ketchup, and meatloaf on a nice, nice sourdough or whole wheat bread. So, so, so good. Anyway, all right, enjoy your meal, keep in touch, and I'll be back with you with Cooking in Real Time in another 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.